just smiling, and I was trying to soak it in as much as I could. I tried to trot on the bases slow. My heart was beating a lot.
Moving out to left field there, the last inning there, it felt like it was the NLDS all over again, or the NLCS.
To get where we were last year, to get to 97 wins, I think kind of panicked Theo a little bit. You know, I don't think he really expected that, but I think it has relaxed these guys a little bit.
The sounds of opening night at Wrigley Field. It's been the place to be already early on in this summer, as the Cubs, as we tape today, are 8-1, the first major league team to get to 8 wins on the season. And their run differential is plus 43, which is absolutely unheard of this early on in the season. So once again, good afternoon, good morning, good night, whenever you're listening to this podcast. It's Andy Mazur here on another edition of Mazur's Musings, the podcast. Today we're going to talk exclusively Chicago Cubs, and I think that's probably a good idea considering exactly what they've been doing over the first couple of weeks of the baseball season. Sahadev Sharma is going to join us. He is writing now for The Athletic. This guy knows a thing or two about baseball and about the Cubs as well. He's following them and taking good notes and really following this team for The Athletic, which is a brand new website, which we'll talk about coming up here in just a few moments when Sahadev joins us from Wrigley Field. But interesting to note about the Cubs, and something that I tweeted out yesterday, lost in all the shuffle of the fact that the run differential is plus 43. It's the fact that they're giving up so few runs, and that is a testament to this pitching staff. The offense is getting all the headlines, and, you know, I guess relatively so, because offense is still the thing that brings people to the ballpark and makes the excitement. But give me a nice 1-0 pitching matchup, I'll take it any day of the week. And you know, the Cubs have been getting just enough good starting pitching and some pretty decent bullpen work as well. I was a little worried about Hector Rondon. I got to admit that. And again, this is a very small sample size this season. But he looks like a different guy going out there and just really attacking hitters, which is exactly what he's supposed to do, because his best stuff is his fastball. And why not? If you're going to get beat with your best stuff. And get beat when you're, you know, ahead in the count. Don't let the hitter get ahead in the count on you, and then you have to come in maybe with your second best stuff. So I like the way that he's approached things so far. But it also starts off with, of course, the starting pitching. You know, John Lackey has been the first one, he was awful early, but showed me a little something as he gutted things out. And Arizona is not an easy place to pitch. Just look at Greg Maddux and his career record there. He has one win, I think, in 14 starts over the course of his career in that airplane hangar known as the ballpark there in Phoenix, Arizona. But Lackey kind of showed us something, because he got beat up early, but yet refused to come out of the game. And the Cubs eventually came back to win that game by scoring 14 runs. They scored a whole bunch of runs for him the other day as well. John Lester has been very good, and Jake Arrieta is Jake Arrieta. I was also very impressed with Kyle Hendricks. And again, admittedly, I was a little worried about the back end of the rotation. And again, admittedly, it's very early in the season and a very small sample size here, and I just love that term, and you'll probably hear me use it a lot today. But Kyle Hendricks looked like a different guy too, and pitching ahead in the count, which is always important for a starter. And Jason Hamill, again, as we taped today on Friday, April 15th, Jason Hamill pitched in last night's game, and again, he looked great. Maybe not early. He also contributed with a couple of base hits too, so it's working out right now. I just like the fact that this is a very loose and spirited bunch of guys. You're getting contributions pretty much from 1 through 9 in the batting order, and you're getting defensive contributions from pretty much everybody. And I wanted to get into that with Sahadev as well a little bit later when we bring him into the program, about the fact that Ben Zobrist and Jason Hayward were brought in. You know, they have great bats, but they're also been brought in for defensive purposes and to shore things up in a couple of positions that were a little iffy last year and in years past. You know, not to take anything away from the way that Addison Russell played at second base last year, or that Starlin Castro played there toward the end of last year, but Zobrist is a proven commodity, and Jason Hayward is a Gold Glover, and he's already made a couple of spectacular plays out there, and you can also tell how other teams are running the bases against the Cubs, especially with singles to the outfield, especially to right field. They're not taking the extra base. The reputation is out there that this guy will throw you out. and has that kind of an arm from right field. It may not be Andre Dawson. It may not be Roberto Clemente, but it's pretty good for this day and age. And so it's nice to see those other things that are kind of happening here as well, as not just an offensive baseball team. And I have to have a feeling, and I have yet to be over there to check these out for myself, and I do plan to get over there very soon, the new facilities. And Wrigley Field, for those that never had the chance to either go there or never had the chance to cover a baseball team there, especially the Cubs, to go into that clubhouse, it was disgusting. I mean, it was a small, narrow, awful place. It was not the Shangri-La. It was not the Taj Mahal. It was basically kind of like the Bates Motel. It was not a place you wanted to be. There was not a lot of room to move around in there. Obviously, the bigger part of it, as far as the players were concerned, there was no hitting cage, no real good players lounge, no excellent therapeutic equipment. That has all changed. 30,000 square feet of clubhouse with all the modern amenities that I think even Jason Hayward the other day when he was being interviewed on opening day said, yeah, there's some things in here that we don't even need. But yeah, we'll go ahead and use them anyway. Why not, right? But that's the kind of things that have been upgraded here since the Ricketts family took over. And there are actually more improvements to that clubhouse scheduled to
vigilante group
to open either later this season or next. They're going to have an auditorium. They're going to open up a second hitting cage.
Absolutely insane
and
ridiculous.
The weight room now is beautiful.
Furthermore, we don't start stuff.
Those kind of things.
And
don't tell me that it doesn't mean anything, because a player's psyche can certainly change when you look at the facility that you're walking into, and it's supposed to be your home ballpark. And the last few years, and to be honest with you, the clubhouse that the Cubs had been using was an upgrade over the one that was even used previously. Up until about 1983, the clubhouse was actually down the left field line. There was a little door that used to be in the left field corner, and I believe they used that. They used to use that as the grounds crew room now. But that is where the Cubs clubhouse was. So you always used to see them after a game not walking down the dugout steps and into the clubhouse. They all had to walk down the left field line to go into their home clubhouse. That's where Ron Santo had the clicking of the heels. It was on his way back to the clubhouse after the game. So as Ryan Sandberg was saying the other day, you had to make sure you took an extra bat, maybe an extra glove, a jacket, depending on the day. And it was difficult to get back into that facility during a game, because you'd actually have to walk out onto the field and down the line to get into the clubhouse. So things have certainly changed at Wrigley Field. And, you know, I'm a purist. I've grown up in that ballpark. My first ever baseball game was taken in that park. I worked there for the better part of 9 years. And to see it transformed, I was a little worried about the video boards and all the other amenities that were going in. But they're doing it the right way. The other night they had Harry Carey, a taped version of him singing Seventh Inning Stretch, take me out to the ball game. I love when they do that. I love to see them do that more. They're not doing kiss cam, muscle cam, dance cam, and all that kind of garbage. And it's also not a situation where they're asking fans to get loud and stupid things like that. If you're a fan of a baseball team and you're going to a game and you don't know when to get loud, go home. Really. Come on. That's my soapbox moment for the day and my get off my lawn moment for the day. All right. So anyway, with all that being said, we're going to take a quick time out here, and then I'm going to welcome in Sahadev Sharma, who is covering the Chicago Cubs for a brand new website in the Chicago area and, of course, nationwide on the World Wide Web, The Athletic. We'll talk a little bit about the development of that website, plus the development of this Chicago Cubs baseball team when Mazur's Musings, the podcast, returns in just a moment.
To become this vigilante group that all of a sudden wants to get their own pound of the flesh. That's absolutely insane and ridiculous and wrong. I mean, and furthermore, we don't start stuff, but we will stop stuff. We will end stuff.
Baseball season's underway. Well, you better get ready for a brand new
go, Cubs, go!
Welcome now to our program, Sahadev Sharma, who covers the Chicago Cubs for The Athletic, a brand new website here dealing with sports in Chicago and, of course, across the nation. We'll get into that in just a moment. But, Sahadev, I know there's some news out of Wrigley Field today and the fact that Javi Baez is back. And how does Joe Madden plan to use him?
He basically said he's going to be playing all over. He expects him to fill in. He said he'd like him to fill in for Zobrist once a week, fill in for Addy once a week, and he's going to get playing time in the outfield. He didn't really say that with Kyle Schwarber down that means he's going to get a lot more playing time. He made it sound like he likes guys like Caesar and LaStella as well, so he wants to make sure that they're getting regular playing time. But I think we'll see Javier all over the place, third, second, short, and it sounds like he's the primary backup for Rizzo, too, and you're going to see him in the outfield.
You know, it's really hard to believe that the way the Cubs have produced offensively, that, you know, Baez hasn't been a part of it, at least until now, and yeah. Kyle Schwarber really hasn't been a part of it. I mean, it just amazes me to think of how much offense they actually have.
Yeah, it's an incredibly deep lineup. It's gotten to the point where the other day I was walking up after a post game and I was like, really? Am I going to write about the offense again? It's just gotten to that point, and we're only 9 games into the season. And it just seems like it's really is a relentless group. Madden uses that word all the time. I feel like I've said it, multiple times a day when watching this group, and it's true. There's no better word. And it's not just that they take a lot of pitches, because they're right around, they're not much higher than league average as far as pitches per plate appearances goes. It's not like they're just standing there trying to wear down the pitcher. What they're trying to do is just get their pitch, and if that's the first pitch, they'll drive it. If it's the eighth pitch of the bat, so be it. They'll just wait till they get what they want to swing at. They're not going to swing at a pitcher strike, and they're obviously not going to swing at balls. And they just that they really know how to work into bat.
And there's so much to get into with that too, because I've always heard the term patient aggressiveness, which kind of contradict each other, but at the same time, it seems like it's their mentality, because they want to be aggressive, but they only want to be aggressive, as you mentioned, on their pitch.
Exactly, and it's something that when Theo Epstein first arrived, he used to say it a lot. He, Jed Hoyer, Jason McLeod, all these guys kind of preached it throughout the organization. It was something that with Javi they worked on. They he's a really aggressive batterer. He was, and he's kind of worked on that, and he's a little more patient now. And hopefully we'll start seeing that at the big league level as well. But selective aggressiveness, patient aggressiveness is something that they're really. it sounds like an oxymoron, but it's a real thing. And the Red Sox and Yankees at the turn of the century really perfected it. And now we're seeing it in Chicago, and it's kind of foreign to us here. I don't think we kind of saw it in 2008, I guess, but this is throughout the lineup. And Madden even said it. I want to say it was after yesterday's game, but basically saying that it can't be two or three guys in the lineup. It has to be throughout, and then the result is what you're seeing right now.
Is it almost an unselfishness too? Because it seems like even the sluggers are taking their walks saying, hey, listen, I've got confidence in the guy behind me that if I get on base, he's going to knock me in.
Yeah, there's not many guys on this team. There's not anyone on this team that I see as someone, as a me player, as someone that's looking to collect stats. That's a huge thing. That's, I think at certain points last year, Rizzo was trying to do too much because the offense wasn't clicking. So, to what you're saying, there is a confidence with everyone. Rizzo was so patient early last year, and the runs just weren't coming for the team as a whole. So I think he kind of pressed. The results were fine. He was good throughout the year, but he wasn't that elite April-May player towards the middle half of the year especially. And then the offense obviously got better. It started clicking. The younger guys started hitting better. Schwarber arrived, and everything worked. This is happening from the very start this year, and everyone believes in the other. They talk about it all the time, how they're willing to take their walk because they know the guy after them. It doesn't matter if it's the number one hitter, the number four hitter, the eight hitter. That person can deliver, and even the pitchers have. I mean, look at all the hits we've got we've seen the Cubs get from the nine hole. It's you know, you're not going to see, that's not going to be their strength, obviously, pitchers hitting, but the fact is everyone on this team can contribute on offense, and it's certainly fun to watch.
Yeah, we haven't seen a Cubs team in recent vintage that is on pace to shatter walk records and things of that nature, because, you know, you always see them setting strikeout records because of the aggressive swings. This is something new and different.
Yeah, I saw some crazy number that right now the difference between the walks that they you know, the pace isn't going to stay like this because the pace is insane right now, but what they're on pace to hand out walk-wise and what they're on pace to get walk-wise, the difference between that is greater than what the Blue Jays got last year in total walks, and that was just a ridiculous offense. So you're talking about some really crazy numbers. You really look at all the numbers for this offense. The run differential. I mean, not just this offense, this team, because the pitching's been outstanding too, and it's been kind of overlooked, but you look at all these numbers, and they're not just like, wow, this is a good team. This is the team on paper that everyone said was the best team, most talented team on paper, living up to those expectations, if not exceeding them. And it's, you know, the hype was real. The hype was insane. And somehow, through, you know, less than 2 weeks, they're delivering. It's, you know, we have to keep in mind that it's not possible to keep up this pace. But it's really impressive to watch.
Okay, I do want to get into the pitching and the run differential in a second, but one other thing about the offense is Dexter Fowler. And I know that the mantra last year was, you go, we go, and it seems as though that same thing is applying this year, and he looks so happy to be back in a Cubs uniform.
It's remarkable. It is. It's. I had kind of, once the season ended, I had a feeling he was gone. It just seemed like he was going to go out there and get a nice four-year deal. And, you know, not that the Cubs didn't want him back, but a four-year deal didn't really make sense for them with the options that they had. And I had a feeling they were going to go hard after a guy like Hayward, and they ended up getting him. And it just seemed like the ship had sailed and him coming back. Now I can't imagine him not being on this team. And, you know, you could tell, you know, this is a talented team without him, sure, but it's just he just changes everything at the top. The way he's been playing is basically that two-month stretch after the All-Star break. I want to say he just got on an insane streak, and he's even better right now. He's better than that. He's got a, you know, on-base percentage hitting, pushing .600. He's hitting. He's doing everything, and he's playing solid defense. I watched him, you know, all those games last year, and he came with a suspect reputation. I wouldn't say he's a plus glove out there, but he's not a liability. But so far this year, he's made some plays where, you know, the jumps looked perfect, and he really, there was a line drive yesterday that was hit past him, essentially over his head, and he just had a perfect beat on it. He didn't break stride. He made the right break on it. He took the right route, and it was a perfect play. And he's just been, you know, a catalyst for this team. And you're right, you go, we go, is what Madden says. It's basically, we talk about it after every game. You go, we go. It's working out so far.
It's interesting too with his former team, the Rockies, in town to think about where he came from, because it was Don Baylor, the former Cubs manager, that cured him of hitting with a split grip from the left-hand side because he couldn't get the bat around fast enough. And Baylor changed him, and it obviously has been history since.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I don't think I knew that about him as far as from the left side. And I have to say, he has, I guess, in the recent past, at least, he's been a little bit better from the right side, but he's obviously no issues from the left side because that's where he's batting from most of the time. Also with the Rockies, a lot of people questioned whether he could play outside of Colorado. And last year he had one of his best power seasons, and he's playing in Wrigley Field, which really, you know, has a reputation as a hitter's park. Look at the past 3 days. It's not a hitter's park. You're not hitting the ball out of the park the past 3 days unless you're Chris Bryant. He's impressed me with just how he's developed, because I even questioned, when he got traded to the Astros, was that a good deal for the Astros? Does that make sense for them? And he had one of his best seasons. And, he's doing that also with another hitting coach that seems to help him, with John Mailey.
All right, let's talk some run differential here, and my thought on that, and I want to get your thoughts on it too, because it's plus 43 going into the game today, and everybody wants to talk about the, you know, the 62 runs or whatever it is, 64 runs, but what about the fact that they're not giving up many? I mean, that's got to be a nice little credit to the pitching staff, and I think people were worried about the back end of the rotation, and obviously we're a small sample size here, but so far so good.
Yeah, we've got 9 games in, correct? They're 8-1, so 8 quality starts. The one non-quality start was from John Lackey, which was just a bad first 3 innings. Anyone will tell you that. He was leaving the ball up. But then he figured it out. I thought that was a great sign how he kind of figured it out mid-game. It wasn't an entire poor start. It was 3 bad innings. And then what the issue was, him leaving it up. I talked to Montero about it. He basically said he felt like he was amped up a little bit and, you know, trying to impress with his first start and kind of calm down the not the nerves, but the energy and the adrenaline kind of came down, and the ball was located better. I think that's a great sign. The bullpen has been lights out. I want to say something like 20-something strikeouts to 3 walks, maybe less. They've only given up 3 runs. They're not allowing, you know, when you're striking out guys and not giving up walks, that is so huge for a bullpen. You cannot give up the free pass. And even though they've had very few close games, they're still not, you know, they're just pounding the strike zone. And yeah, I mean, it's really impressive. Rendon, I believe, has 3 innings. He's faced 9 batters, retired them all, and struck out 7 of them. That is just absolute dominance, and maybe this is the year where he goes, finally breaks through as the nationally. You know, I think we've known, watching in the past couple of years, he's a really impressive reliever, but I think nationally now he's finally going to get some recognition as one of the better closers in the game.
Do you think with Rondon, someone finally got to him and said, hey, listen, you got a great fastball, keep using it, pitch aggressively, especially if you're ahead in the game?
Yeah, I have to assume so, because last year he kind of Madden wasn't playing around, pulled him out of that role. You know, remember that there was that game where I'm not sure if he'd lost the closing spot yet, but essentially he came in and he walked the first batter and Madden wasn't playing around. He pulled him right away. He needs to be more aggressive with the fastball. It got through to him. And I remember his first year when he was a Rule 5 draft pick. I want to say that would be 2013. Month by month, the velocity jumped from, you know, mid-90s to high 90s, and you knew by September, there's something here. This isn't just, you know, I think the year before they had Lendy Castillo in the Rule 5 draft, and you didn't see much from him, and, you know, now Lendy's not with the organization, but a guy like Rendon, you saw that, and you said, this is interesting. This guy's hitting 98 pretty consistently out of the bullpen. This is a high leverage arm, and you have that slider as well. And now he's unhittable. He's a dominant pitcher. They got through to him as far as how to pitch. He had the stuff, and now it's about being confident with those pitches, when to use them, and really, really, being aggressive with the fastball and commanding it properly. And he seems to have that down. And, he ended the season brilliantly last year, and he's come out of the gates on fire.
With the offseason acquisitions the Cubs made, the notable ones, I guess, would be Zobrist and also Hayward. And I think on surface, people will look at that and say, okay, yeah, great, they bolstered their offense. But I think if you look a little deeper, and tell me if you agree on this, and maybe putting more premium on consistent defense in a couple of pretty important spots on the diamond.
I mean, Hayward is the best right fielder I've ever watched. It's not like I've been watching forever, but I asked Madden about, you know, has he seen a better right fielder? And basically he said, you know, I haven't seen a better defensive outfielder. He's like, he wasn't managing it. He was a coach on the Angel staff as Jim Edmonds was coming up. And he said, that's the only guy that come, you know, that I'd compare him to as far as great defensive outfielder. And he jokingly said, well, Clemente. Yeah. So, that's special defensively. I had some questions about Zobrist coming in with defense because he hurt his knee last year and he lost some range. Scouts suggested that range came back as he got healthy. There were a couple games in Arizona where I saw some balls that I thought he should have gotten get by him. And then Madden made a great point about how the ground is really hard. He was talking about Lackey, and his bad start. But he was talking, but it made me think of Zobrist, how the ground is really hard in Arizona and balls kind of zoom through that infield. And I talked to Zobrist about it. He's like, yeah, he still felt he should have gotten some of those balls, but it was more, I think there was one where he slid. And he's like, if I just would have dove, I didn't realize how fast the ball was going. If I would have dove, I had that ball. And that's why you saw him dive 2 days ago on a ball that he probably could have slid and gotten. But he's going to, he said he's going to, you know, if it's one of those in-between balls, he's going to dive because he knows he can get it and just be, rather be safe than sorry. He says the knee injury is well past him. It's not an issue at all. He's 100% with his lower body. His legs feel great. He did say that range is something that he feels kind of comes as the season goes. He feels he's a better defender in September than April. You know, it's one of those things where he gets, you know, you're not playing every day in the spring, and then you start playing every day again, and you got to kind of have to reteach yourself the read of the ball, especially playing a new ballpark every day. You know, how the ball comes off the bat, all these little things, you just get used to it again. And as the season goes, you get more and more comfortable. Not that he's a bad defender early on, just that you know, it's something that he's going to get even better as the season progresses. I feel a little bit more confident about him knowing that he's healthy, because I think that was the main reason he struggled last year. He said he came back too early from the knee injury because the A's were struggling, and he kind of just wanted to get out there and see if he could help his team kind of jumpstart that team. Obviously, it worked out for the best in coming back and getting traded to the Royals. It worked out well for him. But, yeah, no, that defense, man, it's significantly improved all around. It's consistent, and it's just better overall. Those are two key guys. There's you struggle to. I would say outside of left field, there's nobody that's a negative on this team where you say, "Yep, okay, that's probably a bad defender or below average defender." The way Chris Bryan has improved in 1 year in the game is remarkable to me on defense.
You know, Arizona, not to make any excuses, but just look at Greg Maddux's career numbers. There, he has one win.
Jeez. Yeah, no, and yeah, it's a great offensive park, and you know, the ball flies out of there in the air. I just didn't realize the ground ball thing until Madden pointed it out, and that's fascinating too. If you're going to play in a ballpark where the ball flies out, and it's tough for the infielders to handle ground balls, that's really tough on pitchers.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of curious about Zach Greinke too, and why he would decide to go to a place like that, because you pitch at Dodger Stadium, it's like pitching in the Grand Canyon sometimes, because the ball doesn't go, and the infield is so well manicured there. I guess fans don't take these kind of things into consideration, and I wonder if players do these days, if they just see the money and decide, okay, hey, this is where I want to be, I've got security, or if they actually look at those kind of things and say, you know, it's going to be tough to pitch in this ballpark.
Yeah, of all the pitchers that we talk about, I would think Greinke is one of those guys that would really do his research, and I believe he did. I believe he did do a lot of research and somehow was swayed into that not being a concern for him, because you're right, that's a drastic change for him. Trying to think, I don't know what the numbers are for Kansas City, but he had a little stint in Anaheim and then this stint with the Dodgers. So those are two pitcher parks. And I would guess, since I don't really know off the top of my head, I'm guessing Kansas City's more neutral than anything. So now he's going to an extreme hitter's park. I mean, outside of Coors, I'm not sure if there's a better hitter's park than Arizona. So that is... You know, I'm sure it came into consideration, but maybe the money weighed a little bit more. And the fact that, you know, they have an offense there, too. They have, you know, before Pollock went down, that's a terrifying offense, and it's still pretty solid.
All right, I want to ask you about one other thing about Wrigley Field, then we want to talk about the Athletic here and the fact that the Cubs made all these improvements aesthetically to the ballpark. But I think it kind of goes beyond aesthetics when you look at the clubhouse situation, what it used to be and what it is now, and that I can't help but think that would motivate somebody coming in there, seeing exactly what the nightclub atmosphere there, and to make that translated to a positive on the field.
Oh yeah, you know, I think just the look of the clubhouse. Yeah, it's got like almost these nightclub lights. But I also noticed that they can turn that off too. You know, someone is kind of mocking that, like, why would you do that and have that like that at all times? It's not like that at all times. You can have perfectly normal lighting and it's, you know, it looks like a normal clubhouse, a beautiful clubhouse. But I mean, the amenities, when we got that tour, there are certain things that you just can't, you just can't walk into a health club and get, and they have these things that you don't, you know, that are just remarkable. These different types of pool, the hot pool, the cold pool, different things to prepare you for a game and then kind of heal you after a game as well. Just all sorts of different amenities. The fact that Kyle Schwarber can rehab here, I think, is kind of... the fact that you didn't have that option is kind of weird to me before, yeah. and now he can be around his team. I think that's big too for next year. I think him being around the team, he's not some foreign figure. It doesn't feel if they win at all, he won't feel like he wasn't a part of it because he was there, and he can. Yeah, maybe he didn't contribute on the field, but he's here, and he can be a part of anything that happens. And I think that's an important thing. I think recruiting free agents, all these little things, they're not be all end all, but they're little things that add up, and it's a big thing. And I think you're right. Like talent is the most important thing. Guys getting along in the clubhouse is really important. But all these little things in the clubhouse that they have, it's not number one on the list, but it's on the list of things that can help them be a better team.
All right, I lied. One more follow-up real quick, as you brought up Schwarber. And I was hearing yesterday that he's actually going to be involved in the pitching meeting when Jason Hallow goes to the mound, so he can kind of learn for next year. And that kind of goes to your thought, too, because I've been around players that have been injured, and they feel like an also-ran. They feel like they're not part of things because you don't see them every day, and it's unfortunate the way it goes, out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. That's really important, especially for a young guy, the way that he made the impact last year to be around.
Yeah, I found that fascinating. They talked about that, I want to say pre or post. Madden kind of discussed it and said, yeah, they're just going to keep him around. They want to keep him involved. I have no idea what the development plans will be. My assumption is they don't have a clear development plan because he hasn't even had surgery yet. If it's still on the table that he's going to catch, we have to see how he recovers, how rehab goes, all that stuff. But it has to be on the table right now because we don't know what the results are yet of everything. So I think it's a smart move. Why not? You keep the development, just because the physical development process is on hold, doesn't mean you halt the mental development process. So I think that's a really smart move that I hadn't even considered until I heard about it. And I think, hey, if you can still build a guy up mentally and make him a stronger player in some fashion, why not?
Absolutely. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Athletic. I was very impressed with the roster that you guys had accumulated very early. I know a lot of you guys are formerly with other entities, but just talk about the entire concept and kind of how it came about for you.
You know, it's focusing on the local aspect of sports. Right now, we're just Chicago. Who knows where it goes down the line? But I'm lucky that it's just Chicago right now because that's my specialty, and I'm happy to be a part of it. I think it's, we're doing the new stuff, we're doing the everyday stuff, but we're also doing deep dives. We're doing some fun charts, and it can be a 400-word piece that's just, a couple quotes here and there and tells you what happened in the day, or it can be, 2,000 words of hardcore analysis. And I think we're all capable of doing that, which is, it's rare to have a staff like that. But we also have a lot of fun, and I think the key here to our success, what I hope is the key here, is that we're experienced guys. We've all been in the clubhouse, in the locker rooms, and we have experience, and we have a little bit of a reputation in this city that people trust that we can produce quality work. I think that gives us a slight leg up on other startups in that area because we have a little bit of credibility coming in. We've all worked with the well-known outlets. I've been with Baseball Prospectus and ESPN. John has a long history with ESPN. Same with Scott Powers. I'm happy to work with those two guys and everyone behind the scenes. We have a nice team, and I'm excited with what we're doing. I'm excited to be able to cover the Cubs every day in this fashion. In a season like this, it makes my job easy when you're covering a team like this. I said it last year. It was a fun year just covering a team. You know, fun to come to work every day and do and cover a team like that. And so far, a couple weeks in, it seems like it's not much different as far as the fun. The results aren't as important when you're having this much fun doing your job. Obviously, the wins make it more fun. But when you're around a group like this group, a lot of good guys, a lot of guys that can give you good information. That's another thing. It's hard for me to do my analysis job just on numbers. You know, that's boring. Who wants to just read all the numbers and then my analysis? What's, you know, I want to be able to talk to scouts, and I'd love to get information from the players. And I have a really good group of players to work with in this Cubs clubhouse, where I can ask them the nitty gritty stuff and get the hardcore analysis and then apply the numbers to that. And it makes me look smart.
Yeah, I got to admit, that's the one thing I do miss about being around baseball, is that you have that opportunity to be around a smaller group than, you know, say with the NFL, mm-hmm. you're covering them every day. And they see you around, they start to trust you, they and you don't betray their trust, and I know you don't.
Exactly.
It's a great little way to make a living.
Yeah, no, it's fun. There's no doubt about it. I know I'm lucky. You know, it's certainly not an easy job or anything like that. It's not like you know, it's not like I'm coasting through anything, but it's a lot of fun, and I wouldn't trade it in for anything.
Well, Sato, I've been a big fan of your work, and I've been reading you on The Athletic as well, so keep up the great things you're doing, and tell the guys over there at The Athletic I said hello, and I appreciate you taking a few minutes.
Will do. Thanks so much for having me on. Thanks, Andy.
All right, a good man there, Sato Sharma, giving us a few moments of his time. We certainly appreciate that. He was at Wrigley Field earlier today as we taped this on the 15th of April. And Sato, a part of a new venture, as he mentioned, The Athletic, theathletic.com, covering Chicago sports with some Chicago sports veteran writers. And it's some good information and some decent pricing on their website as well. So go ahead and check that out, if you will. Again, theathletic.com. We will come back. We'll wrap up this edition of Mazur's Musings, the podcast, here in just a moment.
Well, I told you I had an email from Tubac, you know, Star Wars, and it says, my friends tell me that you and I have the same hairdo. I thought that was kind of cute. I thought I could offer a suggestion of manicuring your nice hair. You can use tea leaves, boil the leaves, and after you wash your hair, and then boil the water till it cools. Rinse your hair with the water. It adds body and shine. You can also use beer. Then he says, may the force be with you and Pat, and please keep Andy away from the dark side. I don't know if we can keep Andy away from the dark side.
Oh, that just cracks me up every time I hear that one. The great Ron Santo, the late Ron Santo, on a Cubs broadcast. I want to say that was probably about 2004 vintage there with the email from Chewbacca. Anyway, thanks again for checking us out here on Mazur's Musings, the podcast. We're again available on the iTunes store as well, hosted at Podomatic. And of course, I will tweet out links to the podcast as soon as they are posted. Again, my Twitter handle is @Andy_Mazur1. It's @Andy_MASUR1. That is on Twitter. Again, you can email me thoughts, as I have the link will also be posted to my personal website, which is www.andy-mazur.com, andy-mazur.com. And there's a link there also to email your comments. I'd certainly like to hear from you to make sure we're giving you what you want to hear on Mazur's Musings, the podcast. I do plan on slipping in some other sports as well. I know it's Cubs heavy lately, just because obviously the Cubs have gotten off to such a great start. It's a great and compelling story, and I figure that's kind of what you want to hear at this point. As the Stanley Cup playoffs go on, we'll try to talk a little hockey as well. That's another passion of mine and a sport that I am a huge, huge fan of. We'll get into some music, and also I want to do one where we take some questions from some young broadcasters who may have some questions about how I got into what I did, what I'm doing now, and just some advice for them. I'm happy to pass that along. Again, understanding that my information is not the be-all, end-all information here. I'll just give you what I think. and we could do some of those things as well. I do want to get you more involved. I'm going to do a better job, I promise, of getting on Twitter and letting you know just before I'm going to interview someone so you can ask some questions. We can turn that around and ask our guests some questions from you, the fans, again on Twitter. So again, it's Andy_Mazur, M-A-S-U-R 1. That is how you can follow me on Twitter, and I encourage you to do so. Pretty good episode today. We thank again Sahadev Sharma of TheAthletic.com for taking some time out of his schedule today to talk a little Cubs baseball. We delve into not just the fact that they're scoring a ton of runs lately, getting some good pitching and some good defense, and it's a good close-knit group in their brand new clubhouse. So that'll do it for this edition, the third edition of Mazur's Musings, the podcast. Again, hope you enjoy it. Please email me your thoughts and your comments. I'd be happy to respond to those as well. So until we meet again, have yourselves a tremendous weekend and a great week.
Please hang up and try again.